The most important and most highly paid form of intelligence in America is social intelligence, the ability to get along well with other people. Fully 85% of your success in life is going to be determined by your social skills, by your ability to interact positively and effectively with others, and to get them to cooperate with you in helping you to achieve your goals. On the other hand, the inability to get along with others is one of the primary reasons for failure, frustration, and unhappiness. According to the Carnegie Institute of Technology, more than 95% of the men and women who were let go from their jobs over a 10-year period were let go because of poor social skills rather than lack of competence or technical ability. Learning how to develop and maintain superior human relationships can do more for your career and for your personal life than perhaps anything else you could accomplish. According to the work of psychologist Sidney Gerard, most of our happiness in life comes from our positive interactions with other people, and most of our unhappiness in life comes from negative interactions with other people. You may have noticed that most of your problems in life come on two legs and talk back. Fortunately, it's possible for anyone to become far more capable at getting along well with other people. In this session, you will learn some of the things that you can do to dramatically improve your effectiveness and your relationships with virtually anyone you meet under almost any circumstances. Everybody thinks he has or feels he has or wants to have a healthy personality. There have been numerous studies done on just exactly what a healthy personality is, and I would like to give you three of the most important definitions of healthy personality that I've ever come across. The first definition of healthy personality is your propensity to look for the good in people and situations. Your personality is healthy to the exact degree to which you consciously look into each person and each situation to find something positive or good or beneficial. On the other hand, your personality is unhealthy to the exact degree to which you find negative things in people and circumstances. You can measure this by comparing the percentage of the time you look for the good to the percentage of the time that you criticize and complain and focus on the negative. Another definition of healthy personality is that your personality is healthy to the exact degree to which you can freely forgive people who have hurt you in some way. Much mental and psychosomatic illness is caused by the inability to forgive, the tendency to hold grudges long after the incident has passed. The very act of forgiving has a tremendously liberating influence on the human personality. Truly healthy people do not hate, nor do they carry around anger or resentment over situations in the past. Their mental slates are almost completely clean. The third definition of healthy personality is that your personality is healthy to the exact degree to which you can get along easily with the greatest number of different kinds of people. This definition is important. Anybody can get along with a few people. You can always get along with people who are pretty much like you, positive or negative, but the truly healthy personality has an easy ability to get along with a great variety of different kinds of people, of different temperaments, different personalities, different attitudes and values and opinions. For this reason, there's a direct relationship between your own level of self-esteem and the health of your personality. You see, the more you like and respect yourself, the more you consider yourself to be a valuable and worthwhile person, the more you accept yourself just as you are, the higher is your self-esteem. This brings us to the law of indirect effort. The law of indirect effort says that you get almost everything in your relationships with others more easily by approaching them indirectly rather than by approaching them directly. Let me give you a few examples of this law of indirect effort. If you want to impress people, what is the best way to go about it? Well, the direct way of impressing people is to try to convince them of your positive or admirable qualities and abilities. However, anyone who has gone out of his way to try to impress another person by telling that person about himself has had the experience of feeling a little foolish and sometimes even embarrassed. The indirect way of impressing another person, however, is simply to be impressed by the other person. The more you're impressed by the other person, by what the other person has accomplished, the more likely it is that the other person will be impressed by you, by your judgment, and by your perspicacity. So the easiest way to impress someone else is to use the law of indirect effort and be impressed by them rather than trying to get them to be impressed by you. What's the fastest way to get someone interested in you? Well, the direct way is to tell him all about yourself in an attempt to arouse his interest. The indirect way is simply to become interested in him or her. The more interested you become in another person, the more likely it is that the other person will become interested in you. What's the best way to be happy? Well, the direct way to be happy is to do whatever you can think of that will give you some feeling of happiness or pleasure. However, the most enjoyable and lasting form of happiness comes from making others happy. Whenever you do or say something that makes another person happy, you get an immediate feeling of pleasure and gratification yourself. This is how the law of indirect effort works. How do you get another person to respect you? The law of indirect effort says simply that the best way is to respect him or her. When you express respect or admiration for another person, he or she cannot help but feel a sense of respect and admiration toward you. In human relations, we call this the principle of reciprocity. Whatever you do to or for another person, the other person will have a conscious and unconscious desire to do something similar to or for you. How do you get a person to believe in you, given the law of indirect effort? The answer is simply to believe in him or her. Whenever you express that you believe in or have confidence in another person, that other person has a natural tendency to believe in and have confidence in you. The most important applications of the law of indirect effort have to do with a healthy personality and self-esteem. You are structured in a marvelous way in that everything that you do to another person has a reciprocal effect on yourself. Everything you do to raise the self-esteem of another person raises your own self-esteem at the same time and in the same measure. Since self-esteem is the hallmark of the healthy personality, you can actually improve the health of your own personality by taking every opportunity to boost the personalities of others. We said before that everyone you meet is carrying a heavy load. The place where this is most true is in the area of self-esteem and self-confidence. We're all brought up with a deep-down inferiority complex, and throughout most of our lives we need to be positively reinforced by other people. No matter how successful or how elevated people may become, they still need reinforcement of their self-esteem. They still need people to do and say things to improve their self-image and make them feel more valuable and worthwhile. There's a poster with a line that says, "I like you because of the way I feel about myself when I'm with you." This is the key to excellent human relations. The most successful men and women of our day are those who make other people feel good about themselves when they're with them. If you develop the ability to go through life raising the self-esteem of others with the things that you say and do, opportunities will open before you and people will help you to accomplish your goals at a rate that you cannot now imagine. What you need to do is to practice the law of indirect effort and take every opportunity to say things and do things that help people to feel more valuable. The best payoff of all is that each time you express a kindness toward any other person, your own self-esteem will go up and your own personality becomes even healthier and more fully integrated. Whatever you express toward another is impressed into your own personality. The key to raising the self-esteem of others using the law of indirect effort is simply to make others feel important. Everything you do or say to make another person feel more important causes his or her self-esteem to go up and causes your self-esteem to improve in equal measure. People who go through life actively seeking ways to make others feel important tend to be more positive, more popular, and more welcome wherever they go. They tend to be healthier and happier and derive more real satisfaction from life than others. They have lower levels of stress, more energy, and they live longer. More than anything, they genuinely like and respect themselves more, and they experience greater peace of mind. The starting point of raising the self-esteem of others is to immediately stop doing or saying anything that lowers another person's self-esteem. And the behavior that lowers self-esteem faster than any other is destructive criticism of any kind. More relationships and personalities are damaged by destructive criticism than by all other negative influences put together. Destructive criticism attacks the core of human personality, triggering feelings of guilt and inferiority and undeservingness. When a person is the victim of criticism, even so-called constructive criticism, he or she immediately feels angry and defensive and wants to defend and strike back. By the law of reciprocity, whenever you do or say something that hurts someone, especially when it attacks their self-esteem, you trigger a deep desire in that person, even a need, to get even. Each of us is conditioned from infancy to be very vulnerable to any expression of disapproval or criticism from anyone for any reason. Often, parents and bosses criticize in an attempt to improve the person's level of effectiveness, to make the employee better at doing something. The idea is that the individual will then straighten up and fly right. Unfortunately, exactly the opposite occurs. When a person is criticized for a behavior or action in any area, his or her self-concept in that area becomes lower. When their self-concept goes down, their performance and level of effectiveness goes down at the same time. His or her behavior actually deteriorates as a result of criticism instead of getting better. Perhaps the most beneficial decision you could ever make for yourself and for your relationships is the decision to stop criticizing anybody for anything. Decide to eliminate destructive criticism of any kind from your vocabulary and from your conversations. Become a purely positive person by only saying things that build people up rather than tearing them down. Remember, probably 99% of the people you meet are doing the very best they can with what they have to work with. No one deliberately makes mistakes or does things poorly or incorrectly. In fact, the human mind is designed in such a way that it's almost impossible for a person to deliberately do something wrong. A mistake of any kind causes a person to feel incompetent and to not like or respect himself as much. No one does this to himself or herself on purpose. In the Bible it says, "Judge not that ye be not judged, for with whatever measure ye mete out, ye shall be judged withal." Most criticism of others comes from passing judgment on them, from blaming, and from setting yourself up as superior to them in some way. The quote, "judge not," simply says that judging others triggers the law of sowing and reaping and brings down the same negative consequences on your own head. We said earlier that virtually all negative emotions we suffer come from judging and blaming others. The reason we avoid criticism is a purely selfish one. It enables us to remain positive, optimistic, and cheerful, rather than dwelling on behaviors that just make us unhappy or angry. It's not unusual to fall into the habit of criticizing others. In fact, many people's entire conversation revolves around criticism. However, it's essential for you to break the habit of criticism if you sincerely want to develop a success personality. In addition to stopping criticizing, the next behavior you must eliminate is that of condemning others, running others down, finding fault with others on every occasion. No matter what a person has done or how wrong you think it is, keep your condemnations to yourself. Better yet, make a game of finding reasons not to criticize or condemn. Make up excuses for the other person, wish him or her well, and when appropriate, forgive them and let them off the hook. The third downer in human relations is the habit of complaining. Many people slip into playing the game called "ain't it awful." They say things like, "ain't it awful what so-and-so did," or "ain't it awful that prices are so high," or "ain't it awful that business is so bad." And then they try to one-up each other by thinking of things that are even worse. Henry Ford II said it well, "Never complain, never explain." The habit of finding things to complain about attracts other complainers into your life and your social circle. By the law of concentration, the more you complain, the more you find to complain about. Conversely, the more you give thanks, the more you will have to give thanks for. Successful men and women never complain. If they have a problem and there's something they can do about it, they get busy and take action. If there's nothing they can do about it, they simply say, "What cannot be cured must be endured," and then they get on with the rest of their lives. They never, never complain. The truth is that no one really wants to hear your complaints about your job, your health, or your relationships. Most people have problems of their own, and many of their problems are a lot worse than yours. Probably 80% of the people you talk to about your complaints really don't care, and the other 20% are kind of glad you've got them in the first place. That's why Ambrose Bierce defined happiness as that emotion experienced upon seeing the misfortune of a friend. Whenever someone asks you how things are going, just say, "Terrific." When they press you and ask how things are really going, you tell them that things couldn't be better. Everything is great. I feel terrific. Not only will you feel better when you reply that you feel terrific, but eventually they'll stop asking you because you have nothing negative to share. So resolve right now, this very minute, to stop all criticizing, condemning, and complaining. As the Frank Sinatra song says, "If you can't say something nice, don't speak at all," is my advice. If you simply omit and eliminate negativity of all kind from your conversation, that alone will have a powerful, positive impact on all your relationships. You will feel better about yourself, and so will everyone else. There are 7 positive, constructive, and psychologically sound, proactive steps you can take to increase the quality of your human relations. Each of these steps appeals to the deep subconscious needs of other people, to their needs to feel important, valued, and respected. Many of these subconscious needs go back to early childhood, and if you can satisfy these needs in a positive way, you'll be amazed at how much more people will like you, and by the law of indirect effort, how much more you'll like yourself. The first of these 7 keys is simply to be agreeable. People like to be around agreeable men and women, individuals with whom they can freely and easily discuss a great variety of subjects. When you nod, smile, and agree with a person who is talking, he or she feels more valuable and respected. The person feels that what he or she has to say is important, and therefore he or she is also important. Agreeable behavior raises the self-esteem of others and makes them feel better about themselves. On the other hand, whenever you disagree or argue with someone, you are, in effect, challenging that person's knowledge and intelligence. You are telling him that he is wrong, that his judgment and experience are not worth very much. It's a fact of human nature that we hate to be wrong, and never so much as when it is obvious that we are. Being wrong on an issue makes us feel that we ourselves are somehow wrong. Our self-esteem takes a beating. We feel diminished and inadequate, and we see ourselves as deficient or incompetent. When you tell a person that he is wrong, his natural response will be to become angry and defensive, to dig in and be even more adamant about his position. A person's self-esteem is usually very fragile, and when we're told that we are wrong, we react to guard it and protect it at all costs. So be agreeable. Be the kind of person who agrees easily with other people. Remember the line, "Agree with thine adversary quickly." What this means is that if you become an agreeable and easy person to get along with, you create far less resistance in other people to helping you or to getting along with you. Even if the other person is obviously wrong based on your knowledge of the facts, you have to ask yourself, how important is this? If it's not important, rather than disagreeing, just let it pass. When I was growing up, I became a great arguer. I would argue with anybody about anything at the drop of a hat. Often, I would take the time to become well-informed on a subject, just so that I would know more than the person I was arguing with. I could always win these arguments. However, I soon found myself spending a lot of time alone. People began to deliberately avoid me. People didn't want to spend time with me at work, nor did they want to socialize with me after work. I was winning all the arguments, but I was losing all the friends. It's said that A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. I was convincing people, overwhelming them with my superior knowledge of facts, but I was losing in a much more important sense of the word. I had forgotten to ask myself, what's important here? And the answer to the question was that what was important to me was that I get along well with other people. The relationships were what was important, not being right or winning the arguments. When someone says something that you feel is incorrect, just let it go. But if the subject for some reason is so important that you can't let it pass, you can still disagree and remain agreeable by using what is called third-party disagreement. What you do is you put the words of your argument into the mouth of an imaginary or non-present other person. You can say something like, "That's a very interesting point, Bill, but how would you answer this question that someone else might ask?" Then, put your question into the mouth of someone else. You could say, "What do you think our customers would say if they knew we were doing this?" Or you could say, "How do you think our bankers would respond to our taking this kind of action?" In any case, you can continue to be easygoing and agreeable while raising the key questions of disagreement that are in your own mind. Just put the words in someone else's mouth. The advantage of this method is that if the other person has a good answer, you can go along without having ever been disagreeable or gotten your ego involved in the exchange. If the other person cannot answer the question, he or she can change his or her mind without losing face, because the person who is asking the question is not present, and his or her ego is not involved. Your decision to become an agreeable and easygoing person will lower your stress levels and actually increase your ability to influence others to help you. You will raise others' self-esteem, and you'll feel better about yourself. The second of these self-esteem-building behaviors you can start practicing is simply called acceptance. Each of us, from infancy, is conditioned to seek the acceptance of other people. The infant looks into the face of the mother or father to see if he or she is loved, respected, wanted, important, funny, intelligent, and so on. As adults, we are conditioned to look into the faces of other people to see how well we're doing. One of the deepest of all subconscious needs is to be unconditionally accepted by other people, even by people that we don't know. When two people meet, either for the first time or in subsequent meetings, the very first thing that has to be established between them before any interaction can take place is a certain level of acceptance. We look into the eyes, the smile, the face, and the body language of the other person to see whether or not that other person accepts us and is happy with our presence. Many social problems in our societies are just people and groups crying out to be accepted on their own terms by others. When you step up to the plate and express genuine, unconditional acceptance of another person, you raise that person's self-esteem, you improve his self-image, and you cause that person to feel comfortable and safe in your company. And what do you have to do to achieve all these results? The answer is simple. Just smile. It takes 13 muscles to smile and 112 muscles to frown. A simple smile, a genuine smile coming from you and directed toward another person, says it all. It says, "I accept you as you are, unconditionally." When you smile at another person, it makes that other person feel valuable, important, and worthwhile. It causes the other person to feel better about himself or herself as a human being, and all it costs is a simple smile. An old Chinese proverb says, "A man without a smile should not open a shop." Salespeople, business people, anyone whose livelihood depends on the patronage or the acceptance of others, has to learn how to practice genuine acceptance of other people. People who smile generously are described by others as nice people, the kind others want to be associated with. Of course, the hardest time to smile is when you don't feel like smiling at all. But remember, you can act your way into feeling. Even if you don't feel particularly positive, if you force yourself to smile genuinely at everyone you meet for just a few minutes at the beginning of the day, you'll start to feel better again. The storm clouds of negativity will break up and blow away, and your smiles will become more and more genuine. You'll be actually raising your own self-esteem by making an effort to raise the self-esteem of others. The third proactive step that you can take to raise the self-esteem of other people is appreciation. The deepest craving of human nature is the need to be appreciated. Whenever you express gratitude or appreciation toward another person for anything that the other person has done, you make him or her feel more valuable, more competent, and more worthwhile. And all it takes is the simple words, thank you. The words thank you are two of the most powerful words in the English language and the most powerful single expression in virtually any language. I've traveled and worked in more than 80 countries, and I have learned that you can get halfway across any country in the world by simply learning and saying the words please and thank you everywhere you go. The words thank you have tremendous power. Each time you say the words to another person, the other person's self-esteem increases. Each time you say thank you, you reinforce the behavior of the other person and increase the likelihood that the other person will do the same thing for you. And again, if you say thank you for small things, pretty soon people will be doing large things for you. Develop the habit of saying thank you to everybody for anything and everything that they do. Say thank you to your spouse for everything that he or she does for you. Say thank you to your children for anything that your children do around the house. The more you thank your spouse and your children, the more positive and happy they feel about themselves, and the more eager they are to do more of the things that cause those magic words to come out of your mouth. Throughout your day, say thank you to every person you meet who does something for you. Thank people for giving you appointments. Thank them for their comments. Thank them for their generosity. Thank them for their help. Thank people for everything that you can think of. And send thank you notes. Thank you notes are one of the most powerful self-esteem and relationship builders ever invented. When you send a thank you note to someone, even one that contains only a few words, the person will remember you in a positive light for months, if not years. You can set yourself apart from the crowd as an exceptional human being by becoming known for the different ways that you express gratitude toward other people, the number of different ways that you say thank you. Develop an attitude of gratitude. The most popular and successful men and women in our society are those who go through their lives being genuinely grateful for everything and everyone. An attitude of gratitude clears the path before you and causes everyone to want to help you and be associated with you. An attitude of gratitude goes hand in hand with a healthy personality and a high level of personal self-esteem. The more thankful you are for the things you have and the people you meet, the more things you're going to have and the more excellent people you're going to come into contact with. The fourth and probably one of the most powerful proactive steps that you can take to raise the self-esteem of other people, to make others feel important, is to express approval of them on every possible occasion. The expression of approval or praise is one of the fastest and most predictable ways to make people feel terrific about themselves. They say that little children cry for it and grown men die for it. Giving praise and recognition to other people is the surest way to improve their self-esteem, reinforce their behaviors, and make them want to help you achieve your goals. One of the definitions of self-esteem is the word praiseworthy. Whenever a person feels himself worthy of praise and then receives praise from another person, his self-esteem goes up like a thermometer on a hot day. Ken Blanchard, author of The 1 Minute Manager, recommends the use of what he calls 1 minute praisings throughout the day. He says, catch people doing something right. The more you catch people doing something right and praise it, the better they feel and the more likely they are to do it again. Tired children subjected to genuine praise and approval from their parents or teachers actually perk up and recover their lost energy. When a person is genuinely praised by someone that he or she respects, his heart rate increases, his blood pressure goes up, his respiratory rate increases, his level of energy and alertness increases, and he feels much better about himself. There's almost nothing that you can do that has greater power in raising people's self-esteem and making others feel important than the expression of genuine praise and approval for something that the other person has said or done. Praising is an art. Great leaders, great business people, excellent parents are all good at praising. Here are some of the things that you can do to make sure that you're getting the maximum effect from your praising of other people. First, the praise should be immediate. The sooner you praise a positive action, the greater the impact the praise has. Some companies make the mistake of giving people positive appraisals every 3 or 6 months or even once per year. But when you give a person praise long after the incident has passed, it has little impact on their behavior or their feelings about themselves or their future actions. So praise immediately or as close in time to the behavior as you possibly can. Second, praise specifically. When you praise a specific action or behavior, you assure that that specific action or behavior is repeated. However, if you praise generally, as some people do, it seems to have little effect on the other person's behavior. For instance, if you say to your secretary, "You're doing a great job," it will have only a moderate impact. But if you say, "You did an excellent job of typing and getting that report out on Thursday," you'll be much more likely to see subsequent reports completed and gotten out on time. In praising children, the same rules hold true. Instead of saying, "You're a great kid," say, "You did a great job of making your bed and cleaning up your bedroom this morning." When you praise a specific accomplishment, the person is much more likely to repeat that accomplishment. The rule is basically this: praise what you want to see repeated, praise it immediately, and praise it specifically. Third, whenever possible, praise in public. The basic rule here is that if you must correct the person in private, but always praise the person in public. The more people that you praise a person in front of, the greater impact the praise has on the person's self-esteem and feelings of self-respect and personal value. Awards and recognition given in front of a large audience of co-workers have the greatest impact on a person's self-esteem and subsequent behavior. People may work hard for more money, but they will crawl over broken glass to get more praise and recognition. All great leaders are aware of this and use their positions to dispense praise generously. It's important to learn the difference between continuous praising and intermittent praising. If you want a person to develop a habit such as cleaning their bedroom or coming to work on time or turning in call reports, you should praise the person every single time he or she does it. This is called continuous reinforcement. If you continue to praise the new action that you want to see repeated, eventually the person will repeat it so often that it will become a habit for him or her. After the person has developed the new positive habit, then you can switch to intermittent reinforcement. Intermittent reinforcement means that you only praise the behavior every third or fourth time that the person engages in the behavior. Continuous reinforcement, once the habit has been established, can actually be demotivating and may even cause the person to discontinue the behavior altogether. But intermittent reinforcement, once the habit has been established, will cause the behavior to be repeated indefinitely. For example, to get your children to clean up their rooms, every single time they clean up even the smallest thing, praise it and make a big deal about it. Keep doing this until the children start to look forward to cleaning up their rooms because of the positive approval they're going to receive from you. Once they've gotten into the habit of cleaning up their rooms, you only need to give them praise or approval every third or fourth time. That will be enough to keep the habit locked in. The fifth proactive step you can take to raise the self-esteem of others and to make others feel important is admiration. Whenever you admire another person for something he or she has accomplished, for some personality trait or for some possession, you cause that person's self-esteem to go up. Admiration is an extremely powerful tool in human relations. As Abraham Lincoln said, everybody likes a compliment. You can use admiration almost anywhere and under almost any circumstances, and you can be virtually guaranteed that the other person will feel more important as a result. The first place to practice admiration is with personality traits. When you compliment a person for being punctual or for being generous or for being persistent or for being determined, you make that person feel really good about himself or herself. We have a tendency to be emotionally involved with the traits that we've worked hard to develop in our character. We're proud of ourselves and what we've become. When other people recognize and admire our traits or qualities, it makes us feel important. Another thing you can admire is possessions. There are many possessions in which people invest a lot of emotion. For example, most people put a lot of thought into the furniture and fixtures they purchase for their homes. You can never go wrong complimenting people on how attractive their home or even their living rooms look. People also put a lot of thought into their cars and into their clothes. You are guaranteed to make a woman feel great about herself by complimenting her on her clothing or any article of her clothing, jewelry, or accessories. You can also achieve the same effect with a man by complimenting him on his clothes, especially his shoes or his tie. You can also admire people's accomplishments, the education they've achieved, the position they've arrived at, the business they've built, or anything else that they've done as the result of the application of their intelligence and their efforts. Admiring people's accomplishments will raise their self-esteem and make them feel more valuable and important. And if you sincerely want to express admiration to another person for something, you will find endless opportunities to do it. Everyone has accomplished something that is worthy of your admiration. Your job is to find it and compliment it. Let me add this one note of caution, however. Only express appreciation, admiration, and approval when you genuinely feel it. Never be insincere in your attempts to raise the self-esteem of others and to make them feel important. People are like human lie detectors. They can detect insincerity across a crowded room. There's only one exception, by the way, to this rule. People would much rather have an insincere smile than a sincere frown at any time. But in all other cases, your compliments must be genuine compliments. You must honestly mean what you are saying. If you don't, people will feel that they're being manipulated, and you'll get exactly the opposite response of what you desired. The other person's self-esteem will go down, and they'll react by distrusting you and becoming defensive around you. These first five proactive steps that you can take to make other people feel more important have all begun with the letter A. The first was to be agreeable. The second was to express acceptance. Smile at everyone you meet. The third was to express appreciation, to say thank you on every occasion. The fourth was to express approval and to praise and recognize other people for the good things they've done. The fifth was to express admiration, to compliment people on their accomplishments, their traits, or their possessions. Now, here's the sixth and perhaps the most important way to raise the self-esteem of others, and it also begins with the letter A. It is attention. It's been well said that life is the study of attention. You always give your attention to that which you most value, to that which most interests you, to that which is most important to you. Your attention is your life. Wherever your attention goes, your thoughts, your feelings, your life goes also. In life, you always move in the direction of what most holds your attention. In your relationships with others, the amount of attention that you pay to people is the prime indicator of how important they are to you. You always give your attention to that which you value and to those whom you value. The opposite of attention, how do you show that you are paying attention to other people? Well, you practice the white magic of listening. Listening is the true measure of attention in human relations. Listening is the way you indicate how much you value another person and what that other person is saying. It's only when you listen and listen well to another person that you convey to that other person that he or she is a valuable and worthwhile human being. That is why the best leaders and salespeople, the best managers and friends, are all excellent and skilled listeners. We discussed listening in a session on communicating for results. In this session, we will go into the subject a little more deeply. There are three main benefits of listening right off the top. The first is that listening builds trust. Whenever we are listened to by another person, we tend to trust that other person more. We always like and trust the people in our lives who listen to us when we want to talk. When you listen attentively, the other person will like and trust you far more. The second reason why listening is so important is that listening builds self-esteem. When you listen carefully and attentively to a person, the self-esteem of that person goes up. Whenever anyone listens to you very carefully, your self-esteem and your feelings of self-worth increase as well. You feel more important. You feel that you are worth more than when people do not listen or pay attention to you. The third benefit of listening is that listening builds self-discipline. It requires tremendous personal mastery and personal control to listen attentively to another person. The average person speaks at about 150 words per minute, while you listen at the rate of almost 600 words per minute. Active listening requires that you master the tendency for your attention to wander and, instead, keep yourself focused on the person who is speaking. The more you can discipline yourself to do this, the more disciplined and effective you'll become in other areas of your life as well. Here are some ideas that you can use to become a better listener. Practicing these methods of active listening until they become second nature to you will do as much to advance your career and increase your effectiveness with other people as any other steps you could possibly take. The first key to active listening is to listen attentively. Face the speaker directly rather than at an angle. Lean slightly forward toward the speaker. If you're standing up, shift your weight onto the balls of your feet so that your energy is slightly forward. Watch the mouth and eyes of the other person. This suggests to the speaker that your entire attention is being held by what the speaker is saying. It causes the speaker to feel that you are completely engrossed in the conversation. The second key is to listen without interrupting. Most people don't really listen when another is speaking. They are so busy preparing what they're going to say when the other person takes a breath that they seldom really hear what the other person is trying to convey. Whenever a speaker senses that the other person is just waiting for a chance to jump in, or that the other person's thoughts are somewhere else, perhaps busily preparing a response, the speaker feels irritated, uncomfortable, and a little bit insulted. But when the speaker feels that the other person is tuned in completely to his or her words, the speaker feels a deep sense of personal value and self-esteem. So, listen patiently. Listen calmly. Listen as though there was nothing else in the world that you would rather do than to hear what this person is saying for as long as this person desires to say it. The third key to active listening is to pause before replying. When the other person finishes speaking, pause for 3 to 5 seconds before saying anything. In this pause, three things will happen. First, you'll actually hear the other person better. When you allow a few seconds for the other person's remarks to penetrate deeply into your mind, you gain a better and deeper understanding of what the other person is really trying to say. Second, when you pause, you avoid running the risk of interrupting the other person if he has just paused to collect his thoughts. When you pause for 3 to 5 seconds, you give the other person an opportunity to continue rather than cutting him or her off. There is nothing as irritating or as insulting as being interrupted in the middle of a thought or in the middle of a sentence. Third, when you pause before replying, you convey to the other person in no uncertain terms that you consider what he or she has just said to be important and that you are carefully considering his or her remarks. It's a great compliment to another person to have the listener sit quietly and think about his or her remarks before responding, whatever the response may be. The fourth key to good listening is to question for clarification. Ask questions to assure that you fully understand what the other person has said. There's an old saying that we've used before: errant or incorrect assumptions lie at the root of every failure. What this means is that when you assume understanding without checking, you very often don't understand what the person has said at all. One of the very best questions you can use to perception check, to assure that what you heard and what the person said are the same thing, is to ask simply, "How do you mean?" or "How do you mean exactly?" My experience in sales, marketing, consulting, and training has been that if you have any doubt at all about what the person really means, you have probably not understood. It's very important that you ask questions to assure clarity. There are several questions you can ask, all of which are called open-ended. An open-ended question is one that cannot be answered with a yes or a no. The best open-ended questions are those contained in the poem by Rudyard Kipling, where he said, "I have six honest serving men who taught me all I knew. Their names are what and how and why, and where and when and who." The additional benefit of asking these open-ended questions is that you get more of an opportunity to listen, more of an opportunity to build trust between you and the other person, and more of an opportunity to fully understand what the other person is thinking and feeling. You never learn anything when your mouth is open. When you're speaking, all you can say is what you already know. But when you're listening, there is the very real possibility that you will learn something new and valuable. The final step in active listening is to feed back the person's words to them, to paraphrase what he or she has said in your own words. When you paraphrase what a person has said and feed it back to assure understanding, it's amazing how complimented the other person will feel. It's been said that rapt attention is the highest form of flattery. When the other person finishes speaking, you can pause for 3 to 5 seconds and then say something like this: "Let me make sure that I've got this clear. What you're saying is this." Whenever you make the effort to listen so attentively that you're able to feed a person's words back to him or her, you dramatically increase your ability to listen, and you simultaneously increase the quality of your interaction with that person. Earlier, I described what is called empathetic listening, or listening to help a person work through his or her problems. Empathetic listening involves genuinely caring about the other person and acting as a sounding board, rather than trying to solve the other person's problems yourself. Therapists use this technique of empathetic listening by simply feeding the person's words back to him or her. If the person says, for instance, "I feel really frustrated about my work," you might say, "I guess you're feeling really overwhelmed with the way things are going at work right now." When you reflect a person's feelings back to him or her, when you genuinely seek to understand what the other person is really feeling as well as what the other person is really saying, you can help the other person not only come to an understanding of the problem, but also to gain an insight into the solution. There are two types of empathetic listening: simple reflection and interpretive reflection. In simple reflection, you simply rephrase what the speaker has explicitly stated without adding anything to it and without digging at hidden meanings or implied messages. You simply put into your own words what you just heard and feed it back. If a person says, "I'm really worried," you simply say, "You seem to be really worried." In interpretive reflection, however, you go beyond simply restating what the speaker has said by instead reflecting what appears to you to be the underlying message. Something seems to be bothering you about your work. Could it be that your boss is putting too much pressure on you? With interpretive reflection, you can do one of two things. You can summarize what the other person has been saying and then identify themes in these messages. For instance, you may identify a theme such as anger or frustration. Or you could say, "I sense that you are really angry or frustrated or bored in this situation." You don't add a deeper meaning yourself. The second type of interpretive reflection is when you try to paraphrase the thoughts or feelings that the speaker hasn't stated, but that you suspect are the real message. You attempt to deal with the core issue rather than the symptom. For example, one day when my son Michael was about 18 months old, my oldest child, Christina, who was then almost 5, came into the kitchen crying and said, "I hate my brother." Before understanding interpretive listening, I would have said something like, "Oh, no, you don't. You love your brother and you know it." Instead, reacting to the real message that was not being said and understanding sibling rivalry, I said to her, Honey, you feel that we're paying too much attention to your little brother and that we're not paying enough attention to you, don't you? At this, Christina broke into tears and said, Yes, sometimes I feel that you love him more than you love me. She didn't really hate Michael. She simply needed to be reassured that we still loved her very much. This form of interpretive reflection or empathetic listening is very helpful. It requires you to go beneath the speaker's words and seek for the emotions that are triggering the disturbance in the speaker's mind. When you concentrate on doing this, you can be extraordinarily helpful not only to the members of your own family, but also to your friends and the people you work with. Sometimes, all a person needs is an insight reflected back by a sincere friend to be able to understand what is necessary to solve his or her own problems. You can do this only by being a very sensitive and skilled listener. You have to really care in order to listen empathetically. Finally, the seventh key to raising other people's self-esteem is to remember the principle of the boomerang. This principle simply says that whatever genuine emotion you express toward any other person will boomerang back on you sooner or later. Shakespeare wrote, "The fragrance of the rose lingers on the hand that casts it." Whenever you express a positive sentiment to or about anyone, it will eventually come back to you like a boomerang. If you express a negative thought or idea, the same principle holds true. So make sure that your conversation is positive and uplifting at all times. So refrain from criticizing, condemning, and complaining. Practice being agreeable and accepting. Express appreciation and approval and admiration. Pay close attention to others when they speak and remember the boomerang. If you do all these things, you'll be welcome wherever you go. So far, everything we've talked about in this session shines forth at its very best in the art of conversation. It is in conversing with other people, the easy give and take, the exchange of ideas, information, and opinions, that a person demonstrates his or her success personality. Here are a few ideas that will help you to be a better conversationalist in any work or social situation. The first and most important part of being a good conversationalist is to avoid being a bore. There's been a good deal of research into boring behaviors in social situations, and the bottom line of this research is that people consider boring people to be less intelligent, less interesting, less competent, and less worthy of continued interaction than perhaps anyone else. Here are some of the different ways that people come across as boring in their conversations with others. Be alert to them in yourself. The first type of boring behavior is called negative egocentrism. People who demonstrate this set of behaviors are those who are constantly complaining. Their conversation is not only self-centered, but negative. Interacting with this type of person requires real effort. And the more effort it takes to interact with another person, the more likely it is that the other person will be described as a boring person by others. The second boring behavior concerns tediousness or repetition. The individual who tells the same story again and again, or who can only discuss one topic, will require effort to listen to for any period of time. And the harder it is to listen to the person, the more likely it is that a person will be perceived as boring. The third type of boring behavior is the unemotional conversationalist. People who exhibit little emotional expression are usually interpreted as boring. They speak in a monotone voice and they signify that they're not really deeply involved in the conversation because of their lack of eye contact and energy. The unemotional conversationalist seems to suggest that he finds us to be boring, so we find him to be boring. The fourth way to be boring is to engage in tiresome behaviors. A person who talks too slowly, who takes a long time to tell a story, or who takes 5 minutes to make a 15-second point, or who digresses all the time, would tend to be viewed as boring. The fifth way to be seen as boring is to exhibit passivity. This refers to an individual who will not hold up his end of the conversation. Many boring people are people who simply do not contribute enough to the conversation, leaving the other person to make all the effort. They are soon viewed as having no contribution to make. Self-preoccupation is the sixth category of boring behaviors. This is another form of egocentrism, wherein people talk continually about their own abilities, their own problems, or their own pasts. Dick Cavett once said that a bore is one who talks about himself when you want to talk about yourself. This is one of the most common ways for anyone to be boring. It's important to remember to give other people their chance to talk about themselves. Another form of boring behavior is someone who takes everything too seriously. This type of person is often extremely work-oriented and only wants to talk about business. He or she is usually very intense and seldom smiles. Another boring behavior that you've seen is ingratiation, which is trying too hard to impress other people and to be nice. This type of individual usually has low self-esteem and suppresses his or her own natural spontaneity in the attempt to be liked by others. The way you avoid being a boring person is to go to work on yourself. Setting and working toward important goals raises your self-esteem and self-confidence and makes you a more positive and enjoyable person to be around. By keeping your conversation upbeat and optimistic, you attract happy and positive people who find you interesting and stimulating. By getting your own ego under control, you can be more aware and supportive of the ego needs of others. You become a more natural and spontaneous person whom other people like to be around. In addition to avoiding boring behaviors, here are some keys to becoming an excellent conversationalist. Most people are a little bit tense about meeting new people and going into new social situations. The way you can overcome this nervousness is simply by doing it through practice. Get used to talking to people and listening to them. Like any other fear, this nervousness and anxiety will diminish with practice and through the act of confronting your fear. The first rule of good conversation is to cue the subject to your listener. Talk to people about subjects that interest them. Any subjects, including the subjects that used to be taboo in conversation, are okay if they're of interest to the person you're speaking with. You can discuss politics and religion if the other people you're talking to want to do it. But if you see that you're getting no response to a particular subject, back off quickly and talk about something else. One of the best ways to open a conversation is simply to ask the other person, "What sort of work do you do?" If you know what the person does in general, the person's position or industry, ask a question like, "What exactly do you do there?" No matter what answer you get with regard to the person's specific occupation or activities, one of the most powerful questions you can ask to keep the conversation going is, "How did you get into that business or line of work anyway?" You will find that most people consider the story of their careers to be one of the most fascinating stories ever told. Whenever the speaker stops, you can continue the conversation or momentum by asking the question, "And then what did you do?" Asking people, "How did you get into that business anyway?" and "then what did you do?" can enable you to keep a conversation going indefinitely. Perhaps the most important part of cueing your conversation to your listener is to be sensitive and aware of the level of attention and interest expressed by the other person. If the other person becomes fidgety, begins looking around, or begins looking off into the distance, it's a very good sign that perhaps you need to change the subject to something that is of greater interest to him or her. Simply pause for a moment, then ask a question starting with one of the words, "What, where, when, how, why, or who? How long have you lived here? Where did you go to school? When did you start at that company?" A second rule for good conversation is to take your turn. This means, of course, no monologue. If ever you find that you have talked for 3 minutes straight without question or comment from your listeners, you can be pretty sure that you are talking on a subject of interest only to yourself. We all make this mistake. Remember, if other people have nothing to contribute, then what you're doing is giving a speech, not holding a conversation. Taking your turn also means not interrupting when people are talking. And when you are interrupted, as when someone else joins the group, the most polite thing to do is also the hardest. Shut up. Don't go back and finish a story unless you're asked to do so. Good conversation has an easy ebb and flow, like the tide, rolling in and rolling out. Each person has an opportunity both to speak and to listen. If either party is deprived of the opportunity to speak, the conversation becomes one-sided and one party or the other will be thought of as a bore. The third idea for good conversation is to think before you talk, and avoid saying anything that would make anyone uncomfortable, unhappy, or self-conscious. Be very tactful and aware of the feelings and sensitivities of other people. The opposite of tact is just plain thoughtlessness. A good way to avoid being tactless is not to be adamant about anything. Benjamin Franklin, in his autobiography, talks about how he totally changed his personality and his effectiveness with others by preceding each of his opinions with the words, "It seems to me that," or "Some people say that," and so on. If you present your opinions in a tentative way to indicate that you're always open to the possibility that you could be wrong, you'll find it much easier for others to listen to you and to appreciate your ideas. Be sure to indicate and sincerely believe that other viewpoints and other tastes are as valid as your own. There's nothing black or white in areas that are highly affected by individual opinions or tastes. Your views on politics, religion, sex, nutrition, or any other subject on which there are many different viewpoints are just that, your views. If you make it clear that you are open to other opinions and other interpretations, people will be much more open to yours. The fourth idea for good conversation is to respect people's privacy and to reserve a little privacy for yourself. Many people get into the habit of interviewing other people and asking them a lot of questions which are really none of their business. Try to keep your questions general and impersonal and give the person the opportunity to decide whether or not he or she wants to open up to you further. And don't burden casual acquaintances with your troubles. There's something about social gatherings and cocktail parties that generates confessions or long discussions about all the troubles a person is having. Remember what I said earlier. Never criticize, condemn, or complain. Be positive and cheerful. Keep your problems to yourself. It's useful to remember that everything you say can be used against you. There's a rule called Burnham's Law that says everybody knows everything. Anything that you tell anyone under any circumstances is eventually going to be known to everyone, and especially to the worst possible person who you would want to hear it. Be careful what you say, because there are no secrets in social or business life. A secret has been well defined as something that you tell one person at a time. Finally, to be an excellent conversationalist, be natural. Be yourself. Let your own personality flow. Only say what you feel comfortable saying. If for any reason something inside of you tells you not to speak up, listen to that inner voice. Speak easily and spontaneously, without trying to impress or be impressed by anyone. Just say what comes naturally to your mind. The very best conversationalists and the most enjoyable people to be around are those who are relaxed, positive, and completely natural. The art of conversation and social interaction is the playing field where you can develop all your personality skills to their highest degree. You can practice each of the recommendations for making other people feel important that we've discussed in this session. You can avoid criticizing, condemning, or complaining when you're conversing with others. You can practice being agreeable, even when you disagree with the other person's point of view. You can do it as a discipline, as an exercise in personal development. You can practice acceptance by smiling at the people you meet and looking into their faces and eyes. You can practice appreciation by saying thank you for everything that everyone does for you. You can practice approval and recognition by praising other people for their accomplishments. You can practice admiration by asking people about themselves and then admiring their traits and accomplishments. Above all, you can practice attention, the white magic of active listening. This, as much as any other habit, will mark you as the kind of person that other people want to be around. There's a famous story told about Dale Carnegie. The story goes that he was once invited to a party in New York being held in honor of a wealthy woman who had just returned from a trip to Africa. When Dale Carnegie arrived at the party, he was introduced to this woman, and the woman immediately said, "Oh, Mr. Carnegie, I've heard that you are one of the finest conversationalists in New York. Is that true?" To which Dale Carnegie replied, Thank you very much, madam. And I have heard that you have just returned from a trip to Africa. Why did you decide to go to Africa? And when she had replied to that question, Dale Carnegie asked, And who did you take to Africa with you? And when did you go to Africa? And when did you return? And where did you go when you were in Africa? And how did you get there? And what did you do when you were in Africa? The wealthy woman and Dale Carnegie conversed for about 20 minutes. During this time, the woman spoke about 95% of the time in answer to Mr. Carnegie's questions. The next day, in the social pages of a New York newspaper, this woman was quoted as saying, Mr. Dale Carnegie is surely one of the finest conversationalists in New York. You too can become a brilliant conversationalist and an extremely positive person by learning how to speak and especially by learning how to listen.